Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
America and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 101, Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. I just lost my spot. Hey, you know what it was? It was Bob Kincaid. I've got to tell you, I've got to stop listening to his show. Just before he actually thanked John Fox for fixing all things that go crunk. That was about all I could take. I was laughing out loud, trying to find headphones, trying to find my glasses, and Bob says something like that. It's not safe to listen to a Bob Kincaid's show and then go into your own. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Tuesday, January the 15th, 2008. So if you're listening a little after 9 p.m. on a Tuesday, which is January the 15th, you are indeed listening to a live show. And you're welcome to call in and speak to myself and to the guest I'll be introducing shortly. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. That's 877-443-2366 to get it out numerically. If you have unlimited long distance, please use that and save the studio a nickel or a buck. And every bit helps. As I said, we are listener-supported. By the way, you'll find the PayPal buttons if you can help keep the network streaming and passing packets. That's at headonradionetwork.com. You'll find the PayPal button on the homepage there, in addition to 1,000 other things. The studio line for a unlimited long distance is area code 304-658-3333. And that rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check that during the breaks. Let's see what we have here. The show site, yes, it's strictlyconfidentialradio.com. There you're going to find links to all of the guests. You'll find links to the audio archives from past shows, as well as to our chat room, which is active as we speak. You'll find links to the Head On Radio Network main site, and there you can find out about all the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network. There are links there also for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. Speaking of the music that we hear on the show, we have a wonderful treat for you this evening in the last half hour of the show. Tonight's DJ over at the gay bar across the street, Rumors, is VJC. That's Victor from Disco 935. He has a great set of music. Larry will be with us tomorrow, Larry Sanders, VJC again Thursday. And Friday of this week, we have Bobby Vittoretti. Coming up Monday, it will be Mr. Alex Natikin with actually DJ Martin Verlan is playing the tracks for Alex. And that's just incredible. You got to hear that. And Tuesday, next Tuesday, that will be our very own Billy Shears. And Billy Shears will be has already sent in a mixed track. One moment, I'm making a little bit of adjustment. Knobs everywhere, and there are always so many. There we go, Bob, that should fix that up. Our very own Billy Shears will be here this coming Tuesday evening, and he will be in the 10:30. He'll be manning the DJ booths at the gay bar across the street, and that is the club called Rumors. And let's see, while we're waiting on Bob to get the guest on the line, we will talk about some other things. I wanted to follow up with a little story here that Bob was talking about. He closed his show with it, the thing about Mike Huckabee. Lord have mercy. He's finally coming out with the truth, and I'm so glad Bob had that audio clip to amend the Constitution so that it meets God's standards. And in fact, he heard it word for word. I believe it's easier to change the Constitution that would be to change the living word of God, and that's what we need to do to amend the Constitution so that it's God's standards rather than to try to change God's word. So, there you go. When he was saying this, he was referring to the need for a constitutional amendment to protect human life, and of course, an amendment defining marriage as between one man and one woman. So, you know, Huckabee often refers to the need to amend the Constitution. This is the very first time he has specifically called the Constitution to be brought to God's standards. So if there's any remaining doubt in any of your minds what this man is up to, the complete dismissal and dismantling of the separation of church and state, forget about it. He is, in fact, going to do it. He's contradicted himself. You remember on Meet the Press not long ago, he said the key issues of real faith is that it can never be forced on someone, and never would I want to use a government institutions to impose mine or anybody else's faith or to restrict anyone else's faith. But you see, that is exactly what he wants to do, use the government to institute theocracy. Very, very scary man. Many, many people are beginning to catch on to this. The man really does cause a worry in my mind. This evening we are going to be joined by Nadine Smith. Nadine has been the executive director of Equality Florida since its very inception back in 1997. She was executive director of its predecessor, also the Human Rights Task Force, and she was also one of the four national chairs of the 93 March on Washington, and was part of the historic first-ever meeting between LGBT leaders and the sitting U.S. president, that was Clinton at the time. Her list of qualifications are amazing. Co-chair of Equality Federation, served as a member of Democratic National Committee. She has been recognized by the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, the Human Rights Campaign, the National Center for Lesbian Rights, the National Black Lesbian and Gay Leadership Forum. The list is just amazing. Nadine has been on the show a couple of times before. She's always willing, and we appreciate it, to join us and give us the latest updates. And in fact, there is a huge update from Florida. In fact, the Baptists are saying that we are in a state of constitutional emergency in Florida, and the Baptist Convention is actually saying that the situation is urgent in addition to that, and that right now we're calling men and women of faith to pull out all the stops. Nadine, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Thanks for having me again.
I'm so pleased to have you here. Can you hear me okay, Nadine?
I can.
Excellent. Nadine, apparently, I hate to gloat, and it probably it's dangerous too. They always have so many tricks, but isn't this just grand? Tell us what's going on, please.
Well, you know, I mean, just so everyone knows, through a miscount, a computer glitch, some of the petitions apparently were double counted, and a more honest count shows that those gathering the signatures are about 20,000 in that range, below where they need to be by the February 1st deadline. And of course, it's caused folks to look at it with a glimmer of hope that there'd be a way to avoid this, divisive and costly battle to keep discrimination out of the Constitution. But our message has been for everyone to temper that hope with the reality that they have time to get these signatures in. And in fact, we expect that they will. After 4 years of gathering signatures, I think we should all expect that they will pull out all the stops and one way or the other get the requisite signatures to get on the ballot. So whatever hope there is to convince people to say no to signing the petition, and if it were to get on the ballot to vote no, we're gonna have to use this primary on January 29th to really get out that message. So the most important thing, rather than celebrating, this news that obviously can't help but cause people to hope that our state won't be dragged through the kind of battle that other states have gone through, is we need people to show up on January 29th and volunteer to work a precinct somewhere in the state of Florida. You know, take the day off if you can. If you can't, go to work a little bit late, leave work a little bit early, but help us to make sure that we get this message out and convince people not to sign the petition if they haven't, and to vote no. It shows up on the ballot in November, as we expect it will.
Well, Nadine, tell us more about the timing of this. I have discovered today that they have a fairly limited time frame to get this in. In fact, it can't be presented in each individual city. There are additional petitions. It has to be presented or mailed to Central Florida. How does the timing work with the elections, and what is the game plan regarding their deadlines?
Well, this is Florida, so it'll no doubt be interesting how the law gets interpreted. And I think even among the attorneys talking about this and the political writers writing about it, there's not exactly clarity on how this will play out, whether the deadline for turning them in versus the deadline for getting them to Tallahassee. How much time is reasonable to expect the supervisors of elections to have to process? I think these are questions that will come to the forefront over the next couple of days. So there's a way of looking at this that says their window is very narrow, and there's a way of looking at it. I mean, you have to remember in 2006 when they were trying to get on the ballot, they pulled out all the stops, and in the space in a very few days seemed to generate tens of thousands of signatures. From our perspective, I think we have to continue to organize with that expectation. And in fact, anybody who wants to volunteer, please go to fairnessforallfamilies.org. At the bottom of the page, you'll see a link that lets you sign up to volunteer, and somebody on staff will call you up and get you squared away to be at a precinct on the 29th. So in terms of how this will play out, I think there's going to be a lot of questions about what the deadlines mean, what they translate to, and how they'll be interpreted should this end up in court.
Nadine, please tell us what it would mean for an individual to volunteer to go to the polls and help out with this. What would their responsibilities be? Is there training? What would the hours be? Give us an overview, please.
Well, you know what, the 29th is the actual date of the primary. Of course, there's early voting as well that actually started yesterday. But if you're a volunteer, and the peak times for people to show up to vote at the precincts are in the morning before work or right after work, so 7 to 9 and 5 to 7 are the peak times, we'll train you right on the spot. It's very simple. And actually, as somebody who's worked precincts and elections, I can tell you, it's actually a lot of fun. The most invigorating part of any campaign is the voter contact. And, if we've had a chance to talk to everybody who signed these petitions over the last 4 years, I think a whole lot of them would tell you that they regret signing it, that they didn't understand how far-reaching or the impact that it would have. And we know this because there are people who have found their name on the website Know Thy Neighbor, who said they never signed it, or upon one woman who volunteered at one of the precincts said it inspired her to, when she found her mother's name on the list, to go talk to her mother and say, I just want you to know what this amendment actually does. And her mother said, you know what, you're right, I shouldn't have signed it, and let me know how I can help. And they're volunteering to get people to say no to signing the petition and vote no should it be on the ballot in November, as we expect it will. So if you volunteer, it's very easy. Just sign up quickly online. You'll get a call from a staff member who will take you through everything you need to know. Basically, you're just having conversations with people. You're making sure people understand what this amendment does. You're finding our supporters. And generally speaking, even people who disagree with you are friendly. You will find that a light bulb goes off for people when you explain to them that this doesn't simply reaffirm existing Florida law. It goes much further and takes away essential benefits, essential family protections and health care benefits from unmarried Floridians, gay and straight.
Nadine, it's so easy to get lulled into a false feeling of security on this. All of the major newspapers throughout the state are adamantly up in arms against this. Governor Crist himself has said he's no longer supporting it and no more funds to go to the organization that's backing it up. It was originally funded by the RNC, but of course the funding has been removed. There are so many things in our favor, but what we don't always understand is they have the Baptist Church on their side. Now, there's a huge alert going out from the Florida Baptists today. It's called the Florida Baptist Witness, and they are asking people who are pastors to actually send that petition out into the church during a service, and asking people to sign this petition in church and put it in the offering plate when it goes back up. Now, this is a lot of peer pressure. Have you heard that this is what's happening too?
Sure. I mean, we've heard from people who said, you know, I signed it because my children, I have daycare at the big church that we go to, and I wasn't told I couldn't bring my children if I didn't sign, but I certainly was left with the impression that maybe I wouldn't be treated as well if I didn't sign. I think there's a tremendous amount of pressure. I wouldn't assume that the folks who have signed even so far are of one mind. But really, for us, the issue is we're going to have to do the hard work of making sure people understand precisely what this amendment does. It's deceptively named. It's intended to appeal to prejudice. But when people take a very clear-eyed look, not only at the language, the deceptive language that they've used, but at what's happened in other states that have passed these kinds of measures, where domestic partnership has been repealed, where they've had to defend their domestic violence laws, when people see what this really does and what it really means, they vote no. And so that's our challenge. As long as we allow them to appeal to bigotry and go unchallenged, they will win. And to the degree that we're able to educate people about the real implications of this amendment, we will defeat it. You know, Barbara Devane with the Florida Alliance for Retired Americans, who's one of the founders of the Fairness for All Families Coalition, you know, she said, just imagine if all the time and energy and money and all of the resources that they have used over the last 4 years toward the purpose of putting discrimination in our Constitution have been used to do something good for our state, to actually help people, perhaps provide counseling to people whose marriages are in trouble, something that actually protects marriages, doesn't simply use that as code for gay bashing. What if they had put all of this into something useful? So as we watch what's happening in Florida, and there's all the conversations about petition counts, I would love to think that it was possible we could avoid having to put time, energy, and resources into stopping them from doing this very bad thing to the families in Florida. But I've also seen what's happened in other states, and I think we have to keep our eyes on the prize. And it is an all-hands-on-deck moment for fair-minded Floridians. And the primary day of action is really the moment where we need to stand together. If there is any slim possibility of stopping this, it'll be because we stood up precinct after precinct all across the state and made sure that nobody saw one of these petitions without hearing from us about what this amendment really does. So I, you know, the most important thing that people can do right now, probably the only time I'll say this, but more important than making a financial contribution is to donate their time on the 29th to be at a precinct. We will prepare you. Don't worry about that. We'll give you the training and the materials you need. It's an easy, fun, invigorating thing to be right in the heart of a democracy in action.
Well, Nadine, it sounds like we definitely need to rise to this challenge. I'm wondering about the funding for Marriage for Florida. Now, I have read in one article that they are, according to some statements, they are basically running out of money, and I'm hoping this is the case. I'm seeing that they're asking for $50,000 to be raised before January 17th to mail petitions, in addition to the petitions that are going to be handed out in Baptist churches. Do you happen to know what their financial situation is, or have a guess?
Well, you know what? I think, especially if you watch what their financial statements have said all along, it's not really a reflection of what their political infrastructure is. You know, every church within the conservative Baptist network isn't reporting the kinds of support they're providing to this campaign. think they have resources when they need them. I don't think that raising the kind of money they're talking about is really a challenge. I saw recently where the person driving this campaign switched his endorsement from Fred Thompson to Huckabee. I don't know what implications that is, that has for the resources that this campaign will have available. So at the risk of, you know, raining on the party, the folks celebrating what is certainly bad news for the folks trying to put this in the Constitution, we have to keep our eyes on the prize, and we have to, you know, just remain focused on what our job is, and that's to tell the truth about what this amendment does, and be clear about the families that will be hurt, the kind of damage this will do. And this will, if there's any opportunity at all to seize this moment and stop this from going on the ballot, the 29th is that moment. But again, we have seen them in the final hours in 2006 reach for resources and crank up a turnout machine that that has the ability to get them across the finish line, and we shouldn't kid ourselves that that isn't likely right now.
Nadine, one of the aspects that people are finding out is this will impact the seniors, which there's so many in Florida. In fact, aging has been called a growth business in the state of Florida. So many seniors do live together because their Social Security benefits would be cut should they get married. Now, I'm seeing here on the Florida for Marriage site, they have links to several videos. I think they're posted on YouTube. One of the videos is called Trying to Scare Seniors. And the bottom line is that we're attempting to win this by scaring seniors and lying to them. What is the truth about how this would affect the seniors in Florida?
Well, I think you said it, you know, yourself. There are so many seniors who, after they're widowed, choose not to remarry, despite the fact that they, you know, they form a partnership. It's the reason that Bentley Lipscomb, former head of AARP and former head of the Department of Senior Affairs for Florida, has been one of the leading people speaking out against this amendment. It's why Barbara Devane for Florida Alliance for Retired Americans speaks out against this, because they see firsthand the impact, the number of seniors who rely on the benefits and protections that domestic partnership and other benefits for unmarried people, you know, these are essential. They can lose access to health care if they marry. It can have dire financial consequences. And also, younger people are waiting to marry later. And then, of course, obviously, it has a terrible effect on gay couples who already are legally banned from marrying. They've included language within this. It doesn't simply reaffirm existing Florida law that bans recognition of same-sex couples. It goes further and says that you cannot recognize anything that provides a substantial equivalent, anything that provides the same kinds of things that marriage provides. And they've admitted that it would repeal domestic partnership, the kind that we see in California, that it would block civil unions, despite the fact that there's a tremendous amount of support for providing essential benefits. But we don't even have to ask ourselves what could happen. We can just look at other states like Michigan, Ohio, and Kentucky, and we can see what's happened in the wake of the passage of these kinds of measures, where protections have been taken away or are under threat, or they've, you know, endless court challenges. You can look at what the state of Florida's, the office that has to analyze the impact of a constitutional measure. They've raised all of these issues. And said that they're serious concerns, and this is under a Republican governor and a Republican-led legislature. So the threat is quite real, and I'm sure they would prefer to obscure that by focusing as much as they can on trying to fan anti-gay prejudice. But the good news is that, you know, for example, the Fairness for All Families Coalition is a true coalition. It's made up of more than 200 organizations. NAACP, Florida Alliance for Retired Americans, Florida Consumer Action Network, unions, civil rights organizations, ACORN, the folks who work so hard to improve the minimum wage, are part of this campaign because they understand the economic hardship, the fact that essential life-saving benefits can be taken away from people if we allow this to pass.
Well, yeah, that's well said, Nadine, and I should point out, too, that on their site they're linking to YouTube to a video called The Florida Marriage Amendment Will Not Affect Benefits. You covered that well. There are so many cities. How many cities in Florida at this point are offering benefits to LGBT couples?
You know, I couldn't tell you off the top. I think maybe there's 17. But the truth is, that doesn't even include a lot of the, you know, what's happening at the colleges and universities and executive orders. You know, some of the, you know, in Pinellas County, or I think it's Pinellas County Sheriff, has a domestic partnership policy that exists via executive order. The same is true in the city of Tampa. There are places all around where, you know, it is a matter of providing for your workforce. It's a matter of making this a place where people want to work and want to live because they know they'll be able to take care of their families. It doesn't protect anybody's marriage. It doesn't protect anyone whatsoever to make it harder for other people to take care of their loved ones. And fundamentally, Floridians agree that it is wrong to make it harder for people to take care of who they love. And when people realize that that's really what they're being asked, they're going to vote no. I will tell you that the bigger challenge for us is not getting the message out, but getting people to understand which way to vote, because it can be confusing. So every chance we get to say defeat this, vote no, vote against discrimination in the Constitution, vote against making it harder for people to take care of their loved ones. We want to underscore that the correct vote is a no vote. And we can't, you know, we can't stress that enough, because in other states, wrong way voting has actually, you know, been the margin of victory for the wrong side. So that is where we are. We have I think you're right. We're seeing tremendous opposition to this coming from, you know, the editorial pages. We're seeing an unprecedented coalition organizing against this. And I think that the far right has gone to the well once too often. They thought of this as an easy way to drum up votes for.
I love the way you just put that, gone to the well.
Yeah, I think people are just wising up to this, and they're kind of being manipulated by this kind of maneuver. And so I think when it gets to the ballot, we really can win this. And it won't be easy, not because of the message, you know, not because people aren't ready to defeat this kind of measure, but the real challenge is that Florida is a really big state, and we've got to talk to a whole lot of people. So that's going to take tons of volunteers, and it's going to take raising the money necessary to talk to that many people. And that's the challenge that lies ahead. As long as we're able to deliver our message and let people know what this thing really does, we're going to defeat it.
Well, Nadine, one other aspect I wanted to get to with you, and that is the whole phenomenon of people rallying around the threat from the outside. This is often the case in the fundamentalist churches. There's always a straw, some enemy out there, whether it's the brown people coming in from Mexico, whether it's LGBT people, whatever the current villain is of the day, those people are threatening us. So the reason I'm phrasing it this way is because I have seen in reading about this that there is some people are intimating that that this is a plot. They're calling this recount or this discrepancy unprecedented. Do you think that that's going to come up? Is the right trying to attempt to say that this is some sort of you know, liberal government attack, the fact that it's been recounted? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, you know, I think anything that begins with liberal government attack in the state of Florida is laughable. I mean, we've had Republicans
tell me
the control in the every sector of government, you know, for you know, forever. And, you know, these are the same people who would quickly, you know, work to debunk anyone who raises questions about the 2000 elections and voter suppression and, you know, Diebold, all of these issues. I don't think that's credible. Incompetence and you know, human, you know, error. But even the Secretary of State's office is saying, the Division of Elections is saying, you know, look, it's up to you to count your petitions. You know, we do this as a courtesy, but that's your job. And
good point. I didn't realize that they were actually saying that. I knew that the Florida Department of Elections, or however that's phrased, was involved in this about something about a database upload. It was complicated, but I didn't realize it actually hit the bottom line and said it was your responsibility to count them. That's wonderful news.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be lots of finger pointing, but you know, I mean, unfortunately, in other parts of the state, I mean, other parts of the country, they look at this and say, election, you know, something going on during an election in Florida that seems a bit odd. Well, you know, that's just sort of par for the course here. And we'll see how that all shakes out. But I think that right now we have to resist. I mean, other states thought their ballot measures were going to, they thought their Supreme Courts were going to keep them off the ballot. They didn't think the other side was going to get signatures, and suddenly jets and trucks and paid, you know, all manner of things were suddenly available to get them over the finish line. And I say all that because the worst thing we could do right now is let down our guard and be ill-prepared and squander precious days in as we approach this finish line. There's nobody who would celebrate more vigorously than me if we were able to not have to marshal all the resources necessary to defeat this. But right now, we all need to keep our heads and keep our focus and show up on January 29th ready to talk to our fellow Floridians at the polls and make sure they understand what hangs in the balance. And if we do that, we'll stop people from signing petitions and we'll defeat this in November, should it make it to the ballot as we expect it will.
Well, Nadine, that's well said. And when you say that, you're referring to millions of dollars, probably more than $10 million to fight this, should it go on the ballot. I was talking to your media person earlier today, and the media person was indicating how much better it would be if this money could be spent on something real, any number of things, Meals on Wheels, AIDS services, any number of things. It's really a shame. Okay, we may have lost the guest. She might have been on a cell phone, I'm not sure. But in any case, Nadine did cover that quite well. And the only other question I was going to ask her is how many petitions short are there? Are they? And you know, I'm seeing numbers anywhere from 20,000 to 30,000 short. So the question is, can they in fact come up with 20 to 30,000 signatures by the end of the month? I say they can. I say that many of course the Florida Baptists are, Baptists as a whole, but the Baptists in Florida specifically, they're everywhere. They're on every corner, which is to say many of their people have already signed it, but they were not signing it under duress. This, of course, means that there are many more people in the Baptist Church who, for whatever reason, a gay son or daughter that they keep a secret, whatever reason, they have not chosen to sign this. Now, they're going to be passing these out in the churches when the pews are full and you're sitting next to your next-door neighbor and you're supposed to sign this thing and put it in the... And so you have all your neighbors watching you, so suddenly they're trying... This would cause a lot of peer pressure. We all know what that is like. And in other words, what I'm saying is that well is not dry. There are many more Baptist hands that will sign that, and not just the Baptists, but primarily. You see, because they are low on money, at least that's the general thought, the fact that they are low on money means that they cannot pay people to go out and gather these signatures, so they are depending on the churches, And they're telling the church members to take these petitions with you no matter where you travel. Always have them in your car. And you ask two questions. One, have you signed the, are you going to vote? Are you a registered voter? And the second question is, sign this petition. So that's what we're up against. It's great news. And you know, one has to laugh that in the state of Florida, a count of any sort has impacted that side of the fence. One has to chuckle, doesn't one? But in any case, that's the situation regarding marriage in Florida. And it's a controversy about people who love each other and want the church, misinformed though they may be, what the church is trying to do. So as we come up on the break, you're listening to Strictly Confidential. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. I am your host, Peter Godbold, streaming exclusively on the Head-On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
I don't believe in superstars and fancy food or foreign cars that Haagen-Dazs and motherhood have done my body any good. That Elvis is alive and well, that courtesy has gone to hell, that kindness is in short supply, that little kids should have to die. But I believe in love. I believe in dreamers. I believe in miracles. And I believe in you. Well, I don't believe virginity is as common as it used to be. That left is wrong and right is right. That black is black and white is white. That the Beatles could be history, the 60s just a memory, that war will never go away, that Johnny Carson's had his day. But I believe in love. I believe in angels. I believe in mom and dad. And I believe in you. I know with almost certainty what's going on with you and me is a good thing. I know it's true. I believe in you. Now I don't believe heaven waits for only those who congregate. I like to think that God is love. He's down below, he's up above, and he's watching people everywhere. He knows who does and doesn't care. And I'm an ordinary girl trying to make my way in this old world. And I believe in love. Yes, I believe. I believe in promises, and I believe in you. Well, I know with almost certainty what's going on with you and me is a good thing, a good thing. And I know it's true.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey, thanks for lending an ear.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America.
From the first 45 minutes or so of Strictly Confidential, I'm so glad to have you with me this evening. You just heard our guest, Nadine Smith from Equality Florida, and we heard during the break there a promo for Billy Shears' show. I want to remind you that Billy Shears is part of our DJ lineup for the Gay Bar Across the Street segment, which happens the last half hour of the show. Billy's segment will be this coming Tuesday night. Tonight we'll have Victor from Disco 935, more commonly known around these parts as VJC. It's a dynamite music set. Please stick around for that. You won't be sorry. Have you heard the news? Have you heard the news? This is the headline quote. Big city homosexual men are the epicenter of a new virulent MRSA staph strain. More evidence that homosexuality is a public hazard. Yes, again, we are being blamed for the germs. This comes from the Americans from Truth, Peter LaBarbera, who is a professional gay basher, by the way. He does it by using death with a thousand paper cuts versus using fists and chains. Never mind that this has been announced that they... you know, there's no need for him to wait for any more information before he announces this. There's certainly no need to consider the fact that MRSA has been found in hospital environments. By the way, MRSA stands for methicillin-resistant staphylococcus, which is a staph infection that basically resists very strongly as many as seven antibiotics, six or seven, I lost count today. There is only one antibiotic that really is effective against it, and that's Bactrim. And Bactrim is a sulfa-based antibiotic. I've read all this, by the way. I'm not quoting this out to you from my medical experience. It's really not my area. But Bactrim being a sulfa-based drug, some people are deathly allergic to it, I being one. You'll know if you're allergic to a sulfa drug. Well, let's just say it isn't pleasant, and you don't want to try that again. That's what an MRSA is. Never mind that it's been found in hospital environments for years and years. No, no, it's the big city homosexual men who are the epicenter, according to Peter LaBarbera. There's no need to consider that it's passed by skin-to-skin contact, and only very recently, within the past year, has anyone looked at any sort of sexual transmission possibility. There's no need to consider that the places where you can find MRSA, the list goes on and on. In fact, public schools are a very common place to find this virus. But what you do when you're Peter LaBarbera, you don't wait for anything like that. You just pick up the stones and you start throwing as many as you possibly can against those immoral homosexuals who are a public health hazard. So, just want to let you know. Here we go again. This is going to be huge. Peter LaBarbera is the first one to pick it up. Then we have Matt Barber, who's picking it up for the Concerned Women for America, which is another Republican hack group. Concerned Women for America says that in recent years, our culture has adopted a laissez-faire attitude toward sexual deviancy. Don't you love that word? What we need are braces. Like, you know, you put braces in your teeth to keep them straight. That's what we needed, sexual braces. We just didn't get them when we were children. So this laissez-faire attitude toward sexual deviation, she is going on to say, or the Concerned Women are going on to say, that television shows like Will and Grace, yes, that brings the virus for sure, that glorifies homosexual lifestyles, while our children are taught in schools that homosexuality is a perfectly healthy alternative sexual orientation. Of course, the word orientation is always quotes, in quotes, that's what, but homosexuality, but it's a quote to let, you know, it's a script way, it's a typing way, it's a font way of casting some doubt on the subject. The Concerned Women for America is also saying that they are sick of being commanded by militant gay activists, of which I am a very proud member. I have my membership card in my wallet. Anyway, they're tired of being commanded by the gay activists, the militant ones. Anyway, by the way, this is the new term you're going to be hearing a lot now that the election cycle is kicking in. No longer are we just gay activists or radical gay activists or far left. We are militant. And as I pointed out to you the other evening, if we did have an army, you would damn well know it. The finest uniforms and the best victory parties you have ever seen, not to mention the music. So they are also saying there's a dangerous and deadly consequence that occurs in these bedrooms. You see, we're telling her to stay out of our bedrooms. Well, she's saying that the consequences of what goes on in our bedrooms is, you can't make this stuff up. It's spilling out into the general population. It's frightening. Citizens, especially parents, need to stand up and say, no more. We will not sit idly by while politically correct cultural elites, they love the word elites. Lord have mercy. Endanger our children and the larger community through propaganda and promotion of this demonstratively deadly lifestyle. So, yes, and it's expected to branch out into the society as a whole. It's affecting some pockets of gay men in, what, L.A. and San Francisco. And, of course, all your school children are at risk for it, too. I don't know what they have to do with the gay men in San Francisco on Castro Street, but nonetheless, that's what we have there. We have Susan on the line. Susan, welcome to Strictly Confidential. Good to have you. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Peter.
Hi there.
About that MRSA infection?
Yes, tell us more. I don't know a lot about it except what I read about Bactrim to try to impress everybody. What do you know about it?
Well, I know that when my husband was in the hospital a while back, they took a nasal swab, they're taking swabs from everybody these days, and ran it through the lab, and guess what? He has had a colony of that particular little bug, had one growing in his nasal passages. And honey, I can tell you right now, he's anything but gay.
Susan, honey, I have no reason to doubt you at all, sweetheart. I can just tell by your tone, he is anything but gay. Did they do this while he was coming into the hospital after he had been there for a while? In other words, do they screen people when you come in? Not that he had it when he came in. I'm just wondering in general.
Because it's something, they don't want to end up with another Legionnaires type thing, and this is a variation on a staph, they automatically screen anybody who gets admitted.
Which what was the treatment
for his results came back in, he ended up with a quarantine sign on his door.
Did he really? Bless his heart. And I guess that was because, since it was in his breathing passage, they were concerned about it being in the air. What did they treat it with?
What was that?
What drug did they treat it with? How did they handle it after the fact? What did they do to help him?
Okay, he wasn't infected per se. He had a colony growing in his nasal passages. It wasn't infecting him. It was just there. It was living.
Oh, I see. Like a in fact, I came across that today. Susan, that's very good that you pointed that out. It can be just a surface thing on your skin. It doesn't necessarily have to get in. Yeah, that's a very good point. Well, surely they wanted to get it out.
Or anything like that. So he didn't need treatment. What they needed to do was keep him from giving it to anybody whose resistance was down.
I see. Well, did they have an antibiotic nose spray or something?
No, Well, let's face it, it's resistant, antibiotic resistant. Do not want to expose this thing to anything in the way of antibiotics unless it's really, really got you.
Oh, good point,
Susan. Sitting there looking stupid.
Well, during his conversations with his doctors and his nurses, did anyone bring up the fact that this has been in hospitals for years, that this is kind of common, or did they try to keep that on the down low?
No, they kept it. They told me it was common. It was common, but what they wanted to do was they wanted to avoid a massive breakout. If it was going to show up, they wanted to keep it in a very, very small area and keep it from spreading to the other patients, which makes sense.
Yes, it does make sense, and I respect that. That's something that they had to do. But one must wonder if it's already showing up in schools in the general population. I mean, you don't want anyone to get it that doesn't have to, but it's already out there in the public domain, so to speak, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did they venture as to how did they say he got it in the hospital? That's what I'm curious about. Did they actually admit to that?
No, he probably had it before he came in.
Oh. Interesting. So then it is in the public.
Yeah, like I said, it was not a quote infection that was, an active infection that was working on him. It was just a colony that was just set up and living there. And he was fine as long as he didn't go out and actively sneeze on somebody.
And some of the things I read today tells me that it's also spread very easily by skin contact. And of course, he could blow his nose in a hanky and then, hug somebody or shake hands. There's any number of ways. But I'm understanding that a physical, that it loves to travel physically. Germs in the air, too, any number of things. Well, bless his heart. How long ago was this? Is he okay now?
Oh, he's fine. He's fine. They just wanted to take precautions to keep that colony from migrating to someone whose system was really compromised and who it would then attack.
very good point, which is probably one of the reasons it seems to be showing up in the gay community. A lot of people are, you know, in fact, I am too. I haven't made any secret of that. My immune system is shot to hell. But, you know, I'm doing pretty good for, you know, it's not like I'm at death's door. I'm still doing well as long as I take my medication.
I'm sending you pixie dust every day, Peter. I am.
Well, it's helping, and it's I just snort huge lines of it every day.
We're going to have to show up at my door any day now.
You got to do either glue or pixie dust just to be on the network. That's one of their. It's all you have to check that on your job application.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. Just kidding, Agent Fred. Just kidding. Well, Susan, that's very interesting information. Have you heard of any other occurrences of it up in your area? Because you're a little bit rural, aren't you? You're outside of Portland.
Yeah, we're out in the boonies. No, not really, huh? It's not the type of thing, you know, we're kind of isolated, and so we wouldn't necessarily hear about it. We don't really have a decent local paper. And, you know, let's face it, I trust papers about as far as I can throw them. So, you know, it's not something that we would hear about right off, but if it was a big explosion of cases, yeah, that would show up, and there's been nothing. They were doing it mostly just to keep it from getting into something.
Well, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to figure out some way he could have contracted it from some gay guy on Casper Street. The mind struggles to make sense of these headlines, but one never can quite do that, even though one struggles.
Well, I mean, good Lord, you've got not only this idiot, but you've got the Reverend Huxterby wanting to institute Sharia law, for crying out loud. Hey, Peter,
yes, it's absolutely true.
If he gets elected, you and I are both going to run for the Canadian border. I hope you know that.
Yeah, we got to. I can't take this message another 7 or 8 years. It's more than I can bear.
Sharia law? You're gay and I'm a witch. Oh, good Lord.
Oh, honey, we're going now. We are so screwed. Lord have mercy. Another headline, by the way, just for your general information. The first one I read was Big City Homosexual Men Epicenter. That's from Americans for Truth. The other headline is from Christian Newswire, and its headline is Epidemic: Gays May Spread Deadly Staph Infection to General Population. They're all weighing in. 1, 2, 3. Before you know it, the American Family Association will be on it, and it's going to be huge. Another disease.
Yeah. I could say something to that, but I won't, even though we don't have an FCC license. But because my mother raised me to be a lady, even though my father didn't. But I could say something to that. It would be.
Well, you know. I often tell people that
blue
this
and
program
all
is
four letters.
I often tell people this program is strictly confidential and that no one is listening. It's just us. As if. Oh, Lord. Well, Susan, thank you. That's interesting. I just didn't expect to hear that one of our listeners, her husband, living out in the middle of nowhere in Oregon next to a lumberjack camp, probably. Knew about. Yeah, exactly.
We got a pulp mill down the river.
Take care of Oregon Farm. You know, I miss that place terribly.
Well, I will. You'll have to come up and love it some.
Well, I'm tempted. There are often times when I just can't take. You know, I grew up in Florida, so I've had enough sunshine to last me a lifetime. Thank you very much. And
sunshine,
I rather like the rain.
And red staters.
You got that. Yeah. You got that. The mosquitoes, roaches, and hot weather. Give me Oregon any day.
Yeah, you and me both. Why do you think I stay here? Anyway, honey, you have a really, really nice night. and I will send you more pixie dust.
Thank you, sweetheart. Thank you for calling, Susan. And that's our dear friend Susan, who's in an undisclosed location somewhere in the woods of Oregon. And I envy her. If you've not been to Oregon, it always looks sparkling clean. It always looks as if the whole place was just washed. And that's frankly because it has been just washed. It rains an awful lot there. It's a funny thing, though, about that. The annual rainfall in Oregon and Florida is about the same. It's just that in Oregon it rains a little all the time. And in Florida, we get these huge torrential thunderstorms where inches and inches and inches pour down all at one time. It's just the way it is, but I do miss Oregon. I came across something today. By the way, we're not going to do a top-of-the-hour break. The QNN people are down. Our QNN news people are down, and so there's no point in running a news break. I have better news than they do anyway. Don't tell QNN. But I came across this today on Op-Ed News. Now, normally, I don't do a story that I come across on something like Op-Ed News or a story that I come across on Truth Out. There's a couple of others in that short list of or what I consider to be liberal progressive survivor guides. I believe that almost 100% of us either stop by things like Truth Out or Op-Ed News every day, or we have subscribed to their newsletter service, which means that you know, every day, sometimes a couple, three times a day, we get the ongoing headlines that's of interest to progressive people. So often I don't report news that I see there because I just assume, as Bob assumes, that we are the people who already know these things. All of our listeners know these things, and so there's no point in telling you. But this I absolutely could not resist. There's no way I could possibly resist it. And it's about Mike Huckabee's bizarre behavior. It was too good to pass up. Op-Ed News had an article today called Republican Rage, which I thought was a very interesting title. And they're going into Mike Huckabee's bizarre behavior when he was at the shooting range. If you'll recall, at the shooting range recently, he pointed his gun in the direction of a group of reporters. Now, that received very, very little media attention. There was a blog, the Chicago Tribune blog, by the way. That blog is called The Swamp. Did a good job of describing how reckless it was and how unusual the behavior was. But all you heard on the corporate television media was about, you didn't hear about the guy. What you heard about was Huckabee's morbid sense of humor. Ha, ha, ha. That's really funny. So, you know, and in fact, too, that day when he came out of the hunting, he had I think three birds with him, four birds with him, whatever that he had shot that day. And as he carried the birds out, he joked with the reporters that the birds he killed didn't vote for him. Here's how he put it. He emerged happily from the hunt. He had three pheasants. There you go. And he was asked for a metaphor to describe the hunt, and he said, "Don't get in my way. This is what happens." All these things are innocent enough, but it really goes to show, and there's some other examples as I get further into this, some angles and some insight about Republican rage, because it is as common as grass these days. You know, Huckabee has this easygoing image, sound familiar, like George Bush, everything's and it's sort of a facade, but see, under that is a thinly veiled rage, just absolute hostility. And it's not just Huckabee. It runs throughout the entire Republican Party, throughout the entire Republican campaign. And it runs through much of the neoconservative rhetoric. You hear it every day. You know, the article points out that maybe all this started back when Ronald Reagan exclaimed, "I paid for this microphone," or when he joked about bombing the Soviet Union. But the good part comes in here. They are quoting psychiatrist and author Justin Frank. Now, if you recall Justin Frank, in fact, I think Justin has been on Bob's show. Justin did a wonderful job of talking about and describing the destructive tendencies that George W. Bush has. He wrote the book Bush on the Couch, widely circulated. Frank points to Bush's traumatic childhood, the loss of his sister, where he didn't have any outlet for the grief. He talked about Bush's sadistic tendencies, which could be blowing up frogs was one of the things he did. He branded fraternity pledges when he was in the, what was the name of that, that little evil fraternity that, that stole Geronimo's head. I forgot the name of it. I think it was part of Yale. They branded fraternity members with, you know, hot coat hangers from, and God knows what else. His history of drinking, his alleged learning disability. And to make a really compelling explanation for Bush's presidency, if you look at it, he's self-defeating and he's destructive, and again here it's not limited to just Bush. It goes throughout the entire conservative side. They've given away to neoconservatism, and it's part of the radical right. It's absolutely part of the radical right. The chat room is pointing out that was Skull and Bones. Thank you. I had lost track of that in my head. I do wander from time to time, but that's why I love you, because you let me wander. George also pointed out that it casts a light on their rights, sort of a strict father approach. You know, the punishment, the strict father, and it's the strict father approach to policy positions where, you know, you create a world that, you know, where the unwanted pregnancies and poverties or having STDs, or if you're gay or if you're lesbian, all those are your just rewards. They are your just punishment for your immoral behavior. Get it? The strict father. Well, you deserve that, young man. Shouldn't have been doing that. This is the part of the strict father. But, you know, you have to point out that that's a little bit mild. That they're not just strict fathers. Their rhetoric is hostile, and it gets louder and louder every day. This Republican rage, you can hear it on the Fox GOP debate when Fred Thompson confused the Iranian Navy with suicide bombers, and he was all happy, he was all smiley, and it was his fantasy. He was talking about a fantasy meeting of their 72 virgins. You know, that's supposed to be an Iranian folklore for Muslims are supposed to meet 72 virgins. So in any case, he was all happy about dispelling that illusion amongst the Muslim religion. Apparently, he had a huge little fantasy going, a nice little smile on his face. And then you've got the Republican Party, you know, going on that torture. Waterboarding is not any sort of torture, they say. And do you see this mean streak, this meanness that's just... Mike Huckabee is just another one of the same brand, every damn one of them. Wants the war to go on. Bush himself has said, "Oh, it could go on 100 years after I leave office." It's disturbing and it's ruining the country. It's a mindset. It is not peace. It's not prosperity, which is what they say their goals are. What it really is rage, and it's constantly searching for some sort of excuse to be expressed, like shooting up the Iraqis. Casting about for some sort of fight to prove your manhood, while at the same time you adopt a wide stance in a men's room. Lord, the Republican psyche, it never ceases to amaze me. Sorry about that, I had to adjust the headphones. You know, Bush's policies, we've all talked about this. That you can't convince the right-wingers of it, but we are aware of the fact that his actions have increased the risks of terrorism. It has not decreased them. There are very few gains. And in fact, the gains are all on their side, like the invasion of our privacy, the invasion of our privacy, the illegal wiretapping, the things that we have to put up with from the Bush administration. That was an interesting article regarding Republican rage. Sounds familiar? Sounds familiar to me. And, yeah, I have some more news about the MRSA, some more, as they would say, technical information that we really don't care that much about. You know, resistance and various drugs. By the way, this is funny. This was over at Pam Spalding's site. It's from WorldNet Daily. They have a huge headline, Election 2008, Financial Advisors' Number One Worry, a Democrat in the White House. National survey lists concern above terror attacks, recession, global unrest. So this is very interesting. This sounds like the white the World Wingnut Daily, doesn't it? The World Net Daily, the Wingnut Daily. Above all things, above terror and recession and global unrest, the number one worry and the number one reason is a Democrat in the White House. Oh, Lord, you got to laugh. You have to laugh or you have to cry one way or the other. Here we go. There's a huge mucky-muck brewing over at the DNC. You know, most of us here on this network, most of the listeners, I think probably all of us really, certainly myself and the hosts of the other show, have a fairly low opinion of the Democratic National Committee. It's almost as if they are Republican light. So many things that are objectionable about them. They're, you know, corporate financed and this sort of milquetoast, middle of the road, nothing ever really gets done sort of a take there. So there's a huge war coming in within the DNC, and it's got to do with the LGBT folks, and it's got to do about a lawsuit. It's a battle that involves it's going to bring some serious trouble and some serious money. This is when it started back in 2006. Now, there was a former DNC staff person, Paul Yandura. He wrote a letter. It was an open letter, actually, questioning the party's so-called LGBT-friendly commitment. So this is in April 2006. The letter read, and I quote, "All progressives need to be asking how much has the DNC budgeted to counter the anti-gay ballot initiatives in the states. We also need to know why the DNC and our Democratic leaders continue to allow the Republicans to use our families and our friends as pawns to win the election." Yandura's letter also would have probably been thrown in the garbage and ignored had it not been for one little teeny tiny detail. And that would be his domestic partner, Donald Hitchcock. Donald Hitchcock, who is Paul's partner, heads the DNC gay branch in the Gay and Lesbian Leadership Council there at the DNC. And so, of course, the article puts it, poo-poo hit the Democratic fan. Yes, in fact, it did. Hitchcock was in a pretty tough position after the letter was published. It was published, you see, it was picked up by the Washington Blade, which is actually read by some of the people in Washington, some of the politicians, maybe not very closely, but it is read. And when they saw that Hitchcock's partner had written any sort of a letter criticizing the DNC's commitment to the LGBT community, they were not happy. So, you see, about a week after it was published, the DNC communications director asked Hitchcock to step down. He was being fired, you see. Of course, Hitchcock was a longtime activist, and he said, "I know I'm not stepping down. Why would I step down? I'm not stepping down." So soon he had absolutely no choice. Dean and the company, they gave him the boot. So you have to wonder about the DNC's commitment and their motivation. They were saying that Hitchcock was fired for poor performance, although he had been there for years with many glowing recommendations and citations in his employment record. Hitchcock is saying that their explanation is absolutely hogwash, and he has filed a discrimination suit against the DNC. This is just wonderful. So in addition to wrongful termination, Hitchcock alleges that the DNC paid him less than his straight counterparts. You go. Hitchcock is also claiming that the DNC, he uses the word punted gay outreach to the finance department, which used the gay voters for their cash, but did not make any real legislative headway. Later, Hitchcock wrote in a letter in 2007, which was also published, "Lately we seem to be treated solely as an ATM for the Democratic National, the DNC committee." And he says that our civil rights seem to be an afterthought or a burden after they've gone and raided the ATM. There's no attention paid. And then Governor Dean, he became the chair of the DNC, and when Governor Dean became the chair, he got rid of two LGBT positions right away. He got rid of the two positions, closed those down, and added two more finance positions. So you see now, so technically what happened is the LGBT folks had to move over to finance. So now you see what's happening is you now have a total of four positions in finance representing LGBT and zero in political. Sound about right? Does this sound about the treatment that you're getting from the DNC? So another view on this is that we were invited to sit at the table, and we were invited to pay for the meal, but we damn sure were not invited to eat, interestingly enough. Howard Dean's gay politics are going to come under fire during the trial, which is coming up very soon, the wrongful termination trial. Of course, you know, he's a presidential candidate, and he's a doctor, and he's been criticized, by the way, for quite a while for dismantling gay and lesbian outreach programs. Did you know, Howard Dean went on the CBN, the Christian Broadcasting Network's 700 Club. Most all of us know about the 700 Club. This was just two weeks after Hitchcock was fired. He heads out and goes on the 700 Club. And, you know, they're all, that's a very pious, very godly audience there that watches the 700 Club with Pat Robertson. And the Democratic Party, this is what he said to them. He said that the Democratic Party defined marriage as between one man and one woman. Now, the gay folks went wild. The LGBT folks went wild, you know, making noise about this. Because not only did Dean misrepresent the official party platform, because the official party platform calls for inclusion and state-regulated marriage laws. But so Dean hops up on the 700 Club just 2 weeks after they fire Hitchcock, saying that the definition was one man, one woman. And, of course, as I said, it begins spiraling down. So then, then the DNC starts damage control. Okay, so now you've got damage control rolling along. And the DNC treasurer, Andy Tobias, who's also a gay man, he claimed that the DNC had been misled, and that he said that Dean thought he was talking to ABC, not CBN, as if that made up for it. It's the fact which made it probably would make it even worse. And Tobias held on to that position for a few weeks, and then the evidence forced him to go ahead and admit the fact that he had been, quote, misinformed, which is political speak for I lied to you, but I only lied to you because somebody misinformed me. I believe that. Also, later, Dean apologized for what he said, saying that the party, this is after he seriously told CBN, after he seriously sat down and said that, he apologized. He said a party takes a firm stand on equality, and he refused to say whether or not he supports same-sex marriage. But you have to wonder how committed he and the DNC is to LGBT rights. You know, what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to, go out and find some sort of third party? I mean, it's another one of those lesser of three evils. You've got Ron Paul, who's a hate monger. We've read some of the articles that he's written. Some of the LGBT folks that support him don't get that. But he thinks we're vermin, by the way, in case you did not know that. He does not see you as an individual, as some of you may think. He does see your orientation. We've got the Republicans who are hate-mongers and are quite open about it. They don't care anymore. They pass caring. And we've got the DNC, whose position is to sneak around and use this as an ATM. And we talked about this earlier, what was the end of the year? There was ENDA. That didn't get passed. Matthew Shepard, that didn't get passed. Nothing ever seems to work with standard Washington. But, I know we all have problems with the DNC, and I know all of us are not at all satisfied with the way things are going there, but I wanted to give you a little peek at our disenchantment with the DNC. Now, speaking of three initials, we do not have the DNC, but we have the VJC on the line. VJC is our DJ for the segment that comes up shortly after 10:30. And it's an incredible set. I've listened to it earlier. Vijay, welcome. Vijay C., welcome. Victor, welcome to the show.
Good evening, Peter. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. You know, Victor, I have to tell you, I've talked to you on the phone on many occasions, but I have never heard you, sweetheart, I have never heard you like you were on this mix. You are as smooth as glass, you really are.
Well, the thing is, obviously, when I'm behind a mic, it's obviously it's like just like when I cross-dress. It's I go into a different zone, and it's just, you know, when I'm behind the mic and I'm doing my show, I completely transform myself to something else. Like, you know, that's how I do things. It's also a tribute to the fact that here in New York, for years I was just listening to 70s, 80s music here in New York, with a station called WBLS here in New York, a guy named Frankie Crocker. I don't know if you ever heard his name.
Yes, it seems like I have. That is familiar. Oftentimes, mention something.
Well, obviously, he passed away in 2000. But long story short, to me, in my opinion, this guy was the best disc jock to be on the airways here in New York, FM station, BLS. I'm just trying to remember what he used to, in other words, I mimic some of his stuff he used to do, because he was so smooth. I mean, this cat was so smooth. I mean, it was amazing. I learned a lot because I listened to him for so many years, and it's just a shame that he had passed away. But what I'm trying to do is just bring back that feeling of when you DJ. The DJs today, like I just spoke to Agnes over the phone a little while ago. It's too robotic. Everything is planned out. You know, the DJs are told what to say, what not to say, what to play and what not to play. And it's just, this is why when I run my station, I play what I feel that day, and I just run with it, and I say what I say, and I run with it. And no one's telling me what to do and what not to do. That's what the freedom of internet radio is doing for me. So that's why I enjoy doing what I'm doing.
Well, Victor, I have to tell you, I was very, very impressed. In fact, I emailed you back. I was just bouncing off the ceiling. That you have when you're speaking, you're able to actually. There will be a word that you use, and it's in context, but the expression you use with it changes the meaning, and it's unexpected. It's just delightful. I forget what the word was. There was a particular way you phrased something that changed the meaning with just one word. With a slightly different tone. It was just wonderful. I
can't remember what I said because I do so many shows. I did a show for you. I just did a show for WDA1.com. I'm doing a radio show for them on the internet on Sundays from 1 to 3. I also run my shows on Disco 93.5. I do mixes here and mixes there. You know, I just I get inundated with so much emails about what to put on, what not to put on. I got other DJs coming in, like obviously you've known, you know, Vitoretti, Sanders, Glenn Rivera. You know the deal. But the thing is, it's just I wish I had more time to spend on doing this, but unfortunately, it doesn't pay the bills. So it's just a hobby for me. But I wish I was doing this professionally. But it's not what you know; it's who you know. So unfortunately, I don't know those top people. So this is what I'm behind the scenes. I'm very, you know. It's somebody that I'm just really nobody, but I'm just trying to. It's not really about me. It's just about doing something different. We're not being, you know, like being creative. Not, you know, in other words, being innovative, not being imitated. You know, I don't imitate stuff. I just try to gather what's going around me, and I try to bring a different type of view of the music. You know, it's hard to explain, Peter. But do you understand my drift?
Oh, I completely do, and I have to tell you, you are an original. The whole set is composed in such a way that it has definitely got VJC's fingerprints on it. It's really a delightful set. And I've listened to Disco 935 on and off sometimes on the weekend. I will turn it on when I'm messing around and, you know, cleaning up or doing whatever. And I don't know how I have missed it, but I have not heard you do. You know, and Bob and Agnes call it. Remember the movie called, and it was a book too, called Dune, and they spoke in the weirding voice. It was a way of calling people. Anyway, you definitely have got it. You are just an amazing faith in God.
Well, the thing is, even when I was growing up, people, my friends used to tell me because I used to do what's called play-by-play of sports events, and I used to mimic that for the hockey and basketball and football and baseball back then because I used to listen to Marv Albert, and I used to imitate him too. And people used to say, boy, you can do, you know, you can even do sporting events. And I just had a lot of talent back in the day, but I just never followed up. And it's just, I've enjoyed always doing DJ work, but I just never could get ahead. So obviously with the internet, it gave me an opportunity to do my own thing. So I've been doing this for like 9-10 years, and now it's, you know, now I'm over here on this button. You know, it's funny, I'm looking at the chat room, and someone has me on a picture. A picture with, with the headphones on.
Actually,
Travolta.
Actually, Victor, I requested that for you. Our friend ELO does those, and I put a little bug in her ear one day, and I said, "Don't you think we might want to get DJ C?" And she was all over it.
That's amazing. It's amazing. It's funny. It's very funny. And see,
and the headphones got your outfit.
Yeah, and obviously yesterday when I was listening to the show too, somebody somebody on the chat room was saying something about that. Will I be wearing my green shoes? No, I'm not having the green pumps on this evening. I have my black pumps on, unfortunately.
So need a video cam. We totally need a video cam.
Well, yeah, I mean, I could also do the video too. You know, I have jack of all trades, but I called because I just want to tell you your show is always great. Like I told Agnes, I try to listen in as much as possible, but it's very hard because obviously it's a 9/11 show, and you know I work during the morning. You know, I got to work, you know, sleep. You know, the whole nine yards. You know, we all do the same thing. But obviously, hopefully that the listeners who are listening tonight will enjoy the 20-30 minute segment that you're going to play in a little while. Like I said, it's just something that I whipped up because when you send me the email, I said, well, let me see what I can do. And I just put it together as fast as possible.
You did a wonderful job. You are, in fact, joining a set of some of the most remarkable DJs around who are going, and it's so glad. I'm so glad that you took us up on this because this last segment that we do on the show is such fun for me. And because I don't have, I can't mix music here and get it to the studio, and the studio runs it there, it's wonderful that you guys are doing this, and it's really, I'm having such a wonderful time listening to the tracks. You know, there's Jerry was on last night, you're on tonight, and Thursday night,
Jerry,
and we've got Larry Sanders.
Exactly, Jerry Bonham. That was amazing. That was an amazing mix he did. But also Larry Sanders with his edit and Bobby Bitteretti and who else? I can't remember who else is coming on. But
Bobby's coming on Friday, and then that's Alex Nikitin.
One of his DJs he knows, right?
That's right. And apparently this DJ is from the Netherlands, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
I saw
your website. It was one of his DJs. I forgot his name, but. What I'm trying to do is obviously if you continue to want me to do the 20-minute segments, I can do that. That's no problem because, I mean, I have tons and tons of music from back in that time that it's just it's amazing that it's not played anymore. Plus, it's a lot of obscure stuff, you know, a lot of the Euro stuff, a lot of stuff that was played back in the time, and it's just not played anymore. It's like I told Agnes, the problem is that today's music is just very robotic. I think I spoke to you about this many times, but the problem is they play 10 songs of the same artist. You know, they take 10 artists and they play them to death. And the artist, if that's the hit from that artist, they keep on playing that artist's hit. Even though that artist make 10 or 20 other type of songs or hits, they won't play the other songs because people don't want to hear that. They want to hear jukebox radio. It's unfortunate. That's, you know, it's like in the majority rules, not minority, I guess, right?
Well, yeah, I suppose that's
dollar,
true. But
the old dollar, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's the majority is usually the stupidest bunch. It's the ones who are not part of it.
Exactly.
Yes.
I agree.
Now, Victor, I have to tell you that not only should you continue to send it, I'm I consider you to be a very valuable part of this this list of names, and the list of names is growing. And yes, all of these DJs are wonderful, including yourself. Please don't stop sending us stuff.
No. I mean, I enjoy doing this. I mean, I love doing what I'm doing. Plus, if, I mean, one time if you want, I could do a whole live show. Maybe I can. I have the software. Maybe I hook it up to your onto your show, and I could just run a whole live set from here in New York. I mean, that's what I did with the guy in WDA1. He had me.
Wow.
And yeah, I have a software that I could run, and I just got to get through the. It's got to be to a server. Wherever your servers are hooked up, you give me the password, whatever it's called. And I can run it, and I can run your my software onto your servers, and I can do a live program, a live mix right there, right through on radio. Sure.
Now that's interesting. That's a whole new side of the ball game I hadn't even thought about.
Right.
John, very interesting.
Yeah, I'm here in New York, and you're in Florida. We can run something like that. I mean, that's,
yeah, and the studio's in West Virginia, and John's in Australia.
Yeah.
It's just a far flung.
Right, with computers, you could do a lot of things, especially with hooking up with the servers. You just got to get the password and the IP address, and you can go from there. I'm telling you, it's amazing what you can do. And
well,
unfortunately, I know it's a little past 10:30. I think you're going to run the show, right?
Yes, we're gonna run it right after we close this. Yes, we're gonna head over to the gay bar across the street. By the way, we named it Victor. We named it Rumors after the club in the movie Small Town Gay Bar. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah,
by the way,
I have been hearing about that. Yeah, unfortunately, I wish I could go myself and dress. I mean, I'm dressed up as it is with my 5-inch black pumps here. I wouldn't mind coming into Rumors.
Well, I'll see what I can do to get a copy of that to you here in the very near future. Okay,
and you're going to send me that other stuff that we talked about, right?
Yes, absolutely. I'll get that out to you probably tomorrow. I'll take care of that, and either tomorrow or the next day, it'll go out to you. I'll drop you a note when I get that.
Pete, enjoy the next the segment of my mixing. I hope the people out there enjoy my little 20-minute show that I did for you.
Well, I loved it, and I'm sure they will too. Victor, thank you so much for calling this evening.
Okay, Peter. I'll talk to you in the future.
Super. And that's our friend Victor, who is in New York City. By the way, Victor interviewed on this program in the past. We'd like to hear that interview. I assure you, it is one of the most amazing interviews I have ever heard. Did I mention ever heard? That happened on September the 25th. It was a remarkable interview. If you'd like to hear that, stop by strictlyconfidentialradio.com and go to September the 25th in the calendar, and you will see the audio archive located there. So as we head over to the gay bar across the street that we formally refer to as Rumors, our DJ this evening is Victor from Disco 935.
It's Disco 935 here in New York. I'm BJC. We're kicking it off with CJ and Company. We got our own thing. More info at disco935.net. It's nonstop in the mix.
We got our own thing.
Yeah, BJC inside the mix. You can check me out at disco935.net for all the info. Or you can pick me up. We're rocking the house. Hello, it's BJC. And El Coco, Dancing in Paradise. We go back in time, 70s, 80s, and beyond. I'm BJC. Check me out at disco935.net for all info on how you can catch me on the internet. Hello, it's BJC. You're inside the disco, 93.5 New York, with BJC in the mix.
I have to tell you that I couldn't possibly be happier with the response from the DJs that are on the Strictly Confidential team, as I now call it. You guys are incredible. The music that you're going to be hearing over the next few weeks and months will continue to amaze you. The various DJs have such different styles and different types of music. It's just you never know what you're going to hear. As you remember, last night we had Jerry Bonham from the Trocadero, which was wonderful. Tonight was VJC, and that was from Disco 935, and he is as smooth as glass. I would like to point out, tomorrow evening, Larry Sanders, the world's most dangerous DJ, will be with us. And again Thursday, VJC will join us again for another one of his astounding mixes. Now, Friday, we have Bobby Vittoretti. If you'll recall, Bobby has interviewed on the show prior to this, and is an astounding guy. He's sent in several mixes. We have Monday, Alex Natikin. I never get that name right. Now, Alex is our curator of everything Italo. He's one of the world's leading authorities on Italo disco. And Alex has enlisted a DJ from the Netherlands. He is Martin Verlan. This will blow you away. Monday night is fabulous, too. And Tuesday night, we have our very own Billy Shears will be the Tuesday night. Now, that's as far out as we were scheduled at this point, but we have many mixes more to play. We just haven't scheduled it. You know, I have a hard time keeping today in mind and what I'm supposed to do 3 or 4 minutes from now, much less scheduling past next Tuesday. And so anyway, thank you guys. You are doing a remarkable job. And as I say to our news ninjas in the chat room, I could not do it without you. Let's see what we have. Closing up the end of the hour. I'm not even going to try to do any more of this nasty news stuff. There's always so much, and it's always so rotten. I didn't get to the story tonight again about Benny Hinn. Oh, Lord, I'll have to get to it tomorrow night because it's just not time to do Benny Hinn. Benny Hinn and a whole bunch of televangelists have jumped ship from Oral Roberts University. Oral Roberts University, in case you have not heard, is plagued by scandals, both financial and sexual. And, you know, I hate to... Actually, that's a lie. I don't hate to say it. I just don't mind at all telling you stories like this. I really just don't mind at all. But tomorrow night we'll get to that. I think I may have promised that last night we didn't get to it. Again, let's see where we stand. I want to remind you that the upcoming programs on the network this evening, starting at 11 o'clock in just a very few minutes, will be myself and our dear friend John Fox, who is in Australia, and also the world's most fabulous rock and roll guy and network engineer, the radio audio engineer. That's the word I'm looking for. You know, that guy actually went to audio engineer school. I got to tell you, I don't know how this network fell together in such a miraculous way that there's definitely a higher power hand in it. Bob points out that John fixes everything that goes crunk. I would have to back that up. Also, following the John and I and Bob Kincaid will be doing the horn section, which starts at 11, which is a free-form round table or triangular table tonight of the various hosts in the show. We never know what we're going to be talking about prior to the the show, we just do it, and we always have fun. In fact, I'm always reluctant to go when that show ends. Then we have John Fox will be with us live from Australia at midnight our time. I think it's afternoon sometime where John is. And John will be doing his environmental show at midnight. John's branching out to many other areas, as am I. It's hard to stay on the topic right here, but John's show is all foxed up, and he does an amazing show. You'll surely enjoy it. So thank you very much for being with us. Tomorrow evening we'll do more of the same, and again, tomorrow evening the DJ is Larry Sanders. So in closing, here's Cynthia Manley reminding you to...
Best music happens when the sheet music gets put aside and the gang just sits down and jams. Same thing here on The Horn, America's best liberal talk hosts free-forming together for an hour a night. Welcome to The Horn Section. Right here on the Head On Radio Network, America.